Welcome to the Eastern Shore Journal with Tom Herz, a podcast dedicated to the Eastern Shore, its traditions, and the people who live here. We all live here for our own reasons. Some of us are born here and perhaps have deep and storied roots. Some of us have come here to retire and enjoy a peaceful life. Others have come here to raise a family and achieve a balance that's hard to achieve in other mid-Atlantic areas. For me, I came here for the third reason, to achieve some level of balance. I'm a software developer and technical project manager, and I found that I was working 14 and 15-hour days on software projects with little or no quality of life. And once I found the Eastern Shore, and specifically Chestertown, I realized that I could have both my cake and eat it too. I could work on technical projects, but I could also enjoy what the Eastern Shore has to offer, which is great outdoor spaces, lovely people, and deep traditions. I'd like to share some of those conversations with you.
The Eastern Shore Journal, produced in cooperation with Hometown Multimedia.
Welcome to Eastern Shore Journal with Tom Herz. I'm Tom Herz. I'm here today with Owen Bailey, the Town Projects Manager for the Eastern Shore Land Conservancy. Owen was born and raised on the Eastern Shore. He earned a Bachelor of Arts in American Studies from Washington College, and he has an MA in English from Washington College. He lives in Chestertown with his wife, daughter, and dog, Daffy. Owen joined the Eastern Shore Land Conservancy in 2015 after having worked at the Rose O'Neill Literary House at Washington College for almost 7 years. As the Town Projects Manager, Owen oversees the numerous town and community projects aimed at building vibrant and resilient Eastern Shore towns. He once served on the Chestertown Historic District Commission and currently serves on the Chestertown Planning Commission and the board for the Friends of the Kent County Public Library, a great organization in and of itself. I've invited Owen to be on the podcast today because, as you recall from previous episodes, we're exploring why the Eastern Shore is such a jewel in the United States, but why Kent County is such a particularly good example of pleasant atmosphere and the lifestyle that we're all trying to achieve here. It goes back to sort of a statement that Elizabeth Watson had made to me many years ago that, you know, the Eastern Shore is one of the last remaining unspoiled colonial landscapes in America, Kent County being a particularly good example of that. And as we've explored in other episodes, I've talked about, you know, my journey with that statement. And I initially thought of it as landscapes, right? So you're riding down a road and you see a rolling hill or a farm and you think, wow, that existed 300 years ago. But it goes deeper than that, right? It gets to our traditions, it gets to our people, it gets to buildings and conservation efforts to preserve those buildings for future generations. And so Owen is playing a key role in that. As the Town Projects Manager for the Eastern Shore Land Conservancy, he's active in any number of projects which we'll cover today during this podcast. So before we get into that, though, I'd like to take a moment to introduce the Eastern Shore Land Conservancy. The ESLC's mission is to improve the quality of life on Maryland's Eastern Shore through conservation. They are committed to preserving and sustaining the vibrant communities of the Eastern Shore and the lands and waters that connect them. So, Owen, welcome.
Thank you, Tom.
Thank you for being on the podcast, and I appreciate your time. I wonder if you know, I've given a brief introduction of the Land Conservancy, but I wonder if you go into a little bit more detail about, you know, what it is that you all are trying to achieve and how you're going about doing it.
Certainly. So ESLC was founded back in 1990 with the mission of preserving the unique rural landscape that we have here on the Eastern Shore, partially in reaction to the sprawling developments that were growing around our municipalities and along the Route 50 corridor down to Ocean City. Eastern Shore has a very unique landscape. I think it's one of the most highly concentrated areas of prime farmland, and it's one of the few undisturbed areas along the East Coast, you know, northwards up from Philadelphia to New York and Boston, and south down to Charleston and Savannah and Florida, it's an extremely unique area, and one that we were very fortunate enough that we were able to preserve so much of it already.
So before we dive into some of the projects that you're working on, I'd like to ask, you know, guests on the program how you're funded.
Yes. So we're funded primarily through private donations. We are a 501c3 nonprofit. We make most of our money through annual gifts from our supporters, as well as our Party to Preserve gala that we have every October. This last year was the first year that we had it, primarily as a virtual fundraiser, but it was still very successful. And then we make up the rest of our budget through grants and some project revenue through our land conservation work. Because when we preserve a property, that's only the first step of it. It's then put into a conservation easement, but you still have to monitor that easement annually in perpetuity. So that's important that we make sure that our stewardship department is funded so that there's always somebody available to walk the property, monitor, and make sure that the owners of the property are sticking to the terms of the easement.
I see. Okay. And about how many people work at the Eastern Shore Land Conservancy?
Our staff usually between 15 and 17. I think right now we're about 16 full-time staff. Usually we have one or two interns who are helping out either our communications department, or sometimes if you have a special project, we get a grant to work on a special project in our coastal resilience or in stewardship, but usually around 16.
And the area that you cover, right? So is it the entire Eastern Shore, and county, region on Eastern Shore?
It serves six counties. So from the north going south, Cecil County, Kent, Caroline, Queen Anne's, Talbot, and Dorchester.
Okay. Now tell me a little bit about how you enter this world, right? So you're the town projects manager. What does that mean, and what sort of work are you doing?
To best sum that up, let me go back to the creation of the Towns Department, or what was called the Center for Towns. ESLC annually hosts a planning conference to focus on a certain topic. In the past, we've done talks on transportation, food systems, renewable energy. And I think around 2010, we had a conference on town work, and I think especially gateways and green belts. Green belt is sort of like the border around a town where you say this is going to be the limit of our growth. So you have a green belt, an area of nature preserve around the town. It was during that conference, I believe, that we saw if we want to be truly successful with land conservation on the Eastern Shore, we would be better served with a towns department. If you are limiting the growth of a town by putting easements on farms and natural habitats, then there should be some type of mechanism or department to help towns grow within, to help create these green belts, to help create these borders, so that we don't have these sprawling developments that have all these single family homes and very sparse zoning that consumes farmland. So really to help towns create walkable neighborhoods, mixed-use neighborhoods, which is where I come in. If you think about land conservation as defense, the towns department is sort of the offense. And my work primarily right now is to help towns become more walkable and bikeable.
So I'm going to set the economic development conversation aside for a minute. And I'd like to talk with you about some of the tentpole projects that the Conservancy is working on. Projects like, for instance, Delmarva Oasis. Can you tell me a little bit more about that?
Yes. So as I was saying earlier with our annual planning conference, the Delmarva Oasis initiative came out of one such conference. The author Tony Hiss was one of our speakers and spoke about E.O. Wilson's call to preserve 50% of the land on planet Earth to set aside for conservation, and then humans would live on the other 50%.
Can I interrupt you? Who is E.O. Wilson?
I'm sorry. So E.O. Wilson is a naturalist, an author, very renowned in environmental circles. He wrote a book called Half Earth, which called on preserving 50% of the planet to protect species. We are in the midst of a mass extinction event that is due to climate change and warming planet. And we are looking to apply that that methodology to the Delmarva Peninsula. Currently, with conservation easements that ESLC, Lower Shore Land Trust, MET, Maryland Environmental Trust, and other organizations, about 25% of Eastern Shore is already preserved. So we're hoping to get to 50% by 2030.
Okay. So then, just because I find this stuff really fascinating. So talk to me, you know, I'm a landowner, right? I've got a family farm that's been, you know, in my family. I'm either looking to retire or I'm getting older and I'm looking for ways to conserve the property. Maybe my kids want to farm, maybe they don't. Can you talk to me about what the conservation process looks like?
So the way conservation easement works is usually a landowner comes to ESLC and we walk them through the different options that they have, whether it's a purchase easement, a donated easement, and we go through different funding sources from the state to find the funds needed to create that easement. The landowner then gives up the development rights to their property in exchange for the conservation easement, and then they also get a tax break for it. I think the tax break can be spread out over a 15-year period. And for a farmer, this is great because it can lower their property taxes. It gives them cash in their pocket that they could then use to reinvest into their farm. And it preserves their farm and makes sure that that farm stays a farm in perpetuity.
And that ultimately feeds the half-earth vision, right? And specifically the Delmarva Peninsula.
Correct. And we preserve farmland habitats. We work with DNR to create parks. We created the Bohemia River Park up near Chesapeake City a couple of years ago in partnership with DNR. So there's, you know, it's very nuanced. Every property has its own special characteristics, its own special beauty. And we help try to realize that beauty.
So then the next project that you all, you know, sort of focus on or you're centrally organized around is the Chester River Heritage Trail. What is that project?
So that's been an idea that's been in Chestertown for a number of years to create a boardwalk along the Chester River to create more access so that more people can see the beauty of the river. Right now, the only space that's available to the public along the river is the foot of High Street across the boardwalk over towards 98 Cannon and then Wilmer Park. And that's it, not much. So this boardwalk would run along the river out towards Radcliffe Creek and would create a lot more access for residents to walk it, to ride their bikes on it, to see the beauty of the river. We're hoping that classes could be held out there so that students in the county and students in other counties can come and see the beauty of the Chester River and to learn about its natural history and about the colonial history of Chestertown.
So this is a personal project, right? But as everyone listening to this podcast probably knows, I'm a council member in Chestertown. And I represent the ward where this heritage trail will go. And I have to say, I'm just so excited about it. It's really gonna be, if we can get the funding, if we can bring it to fruition, and I know that we can, right? I know we can put our shoulder into this and get it done, but it's just gonna be such a value add to Chestertown,
right? I agree.
So many levels.
It's going to be great for the residents. It's going to be great for tourism. It's going to be great for young people who will get to experience this town the way no one has ever been able to experience it before.
Absolutely right. No question about it. And then, you know, sort of the final project, and I think this is where your sort of passion really comes, is the Open Streets campaign. What are you trying to achieve there?
So this came out of the start of the pandemic last year, where I stepped into this role at ESLC about this time in 2020, and we were working on our next 5-year strategic plan and thinking where should the town's department go. And we agree as an organization, it should be about access. If we're going to be developing the Delmarva Oasis Initiative, the town's department should be there to help create access for people to these beautiful preserved properties. And that access has to begin at the street right in front of your house. And as I mentioned earlier on, most people in Chestertown, or a lot of people in Chestertown, don't even have a sidewalk in front of their house. So how do we create that access? And in looking at what other towns did during the beginning of the pandemic, is they used a tool called a demonstration project. It's also been called a pop-up project or tactical urbanism. I tend to like the term demonstration project because I think it really speaks to that it's using inexpensive materials to demonstrate how a street can be redesigned using curb extensions, highlighted crosswalks, bike lanes, extended sidewalks to make our streets more walkable. And more bikeable, and that will create that access that I'm talking about.
I see. So that sounds great, right? And I know that you're right that there are a lot of homes in Chestertown and various other communities in Kent County and Shore where there aren't sidewalks, and the cost of putting sidewalks in is astronomical, right? Mm-hmm. I mean, yeah. It's more than you would ever guess. Right?
I mean, it turns out there's a lot of engineering that has to go into a sidewalk because you have to think about the grade, you have to think about stormwater runoff, infrastructure that is beneath that sidewalk. It becomes a very complicated process. And when a project like that is such a big lift, a lot of times it goes undone. And a demonstration project is a way that we can go out and we can do this kind of work right now. And part of the spirit of the demonstration project is the ideas come from the residents right along those streets. I mean, it's not me going into a community saying, oh, you should do this and this. And this is me going into a community saying, here's a tool. Tell me how you would like to use this tool. You know your street better than anyone else. How can your street be redesigned so that you can have better access to basic services?
And I think that makes perfect sense, right? Because what it allows you to do is, without sort of upending everybody's world, that your work demonstrate that change is possible without permanently, pinching in a street or putting in a $1 million sidewalk or whatever it is. And I also find that residents, emails coming into my council person email, they will jump to a logical conclusion, right? Which is to say, well, traffic is going fast down my road, so I need a speed bump, or traffic is going down my road, so I need a stop sign. And I have found that this is just the vocabulary that they have at that moment, right? Mm-hmm. There's a frustration which causes them to contact either me or you or whomever. And all they know to say is, I need a stop sign, right?
Yeah. Yeah.
But really, there is a whole world of things that you could do temporarily to slow traffic. I just had this situation on High Street where residents were complaining of revving engines and people just misbehaving going down toward the water. We put the radar car there, the little part, and people immediately slowed down. And I started getting emails like, yep, that fixed the problem. Well, okay, so that's not in line with really what you're talking about in the granular sense, but it is in the broader sense, right? It is a temporary thing that shows that change is possible. And now we need to think about sort of medium permanent solutions, right? I mean, is that where you're headed with it?
Correct. Yeah. Those radar trackers are a great example of sort of what I'm introducing. You place that in a certain location and it's going to have an immediate effect where people are going to slow down because it's a visual that a driver sees that says, I need to slow down. But you can't keep that there forever. Eventually you have to move it around to different locations. And it's not a permanent solution, but it is a good temporary solution. So think about what space does that radar take up, and think about, okay, what can we put in place there that would also force cars to slow down? Because it's all about a visual. A driver's going to drive according to what the road gives them. If you have a wide open road that is built like a drag strip, a driver's going to use it like a drag strip. If you put a chicane, which is sort of a curb bump out that creates a natural swerve in the road, they're going to slow down as they come into that because they see the road as being sort of a more complex place, or there's a visual barrier that, okay, I need to slow down, so I take this at an appropriate speed. And that's when the road becomes safe for pedestrians and cyclists. As you said, sidewalks are incredibly expensive. We can't afford to put sidewalks in every street, but we maybe don't need to put sidewalks in every street. Take my neighborhood, for example, in the first ward. There's not much through traffic. The streets are very quiet, except for the occasional car that comes speeding through at 30, 35 miles an hour. So we don't really need a sidewalk, but what can we do just to slow that one car down so that we can share the road, pedestrian, cyclist, and cars traveling at a safer speed? But a nice thing about the demonstration project is roads are incredibly complex places. If you think about it, that's where mail is delivered, that's where fire trucks, ambulances, other first responders need access, school buses, deliveries, and many, many other uses. So a demonstration project allows you to start small and work your way up so that you're not having such a severe impact on the road. Also, you don't know the unintended consequences. If we put up a bike lane coming down one road, is that then going to divert traffic to make another road, to make traffic on another street even worse? Take in Chestertown, Philosopher's Terrace. There's been a lot of discussion about putting a sidewalk or some kind of traffic calming measure going down Philosopher's Terrace between Kent and campus. But will that then force cars to go onto Kent Street to get to Byford so that they can get to campus in another direction? So we need to be flexible, start small, and work our way up.
I tend to agree with that point of view. And with that, Owen, I think we're going to end. Thank you so much for your time. So how can people reach out to you? How can people get more information about the Eastern Shore Land Conservancy and your projects in particular?
Probably the best place is to go onto our website. They can find my information there and information about our projects and everything we do at ESLC. And to join us on social media, we have a Facebook and Twitter account.
And I will link to all of that on the podcast webpage.
Great. Well, thank you so much.
The Eastern Shore Journal, produced in cooperation with Hometown Multimedia.
Thank you for joining us today. I would like to thank Brian Moore and Leslie C. at WCTR for their help and support in creating this podcast, and offer special thanks to Pat Haley, my producer, for all of his hard work getting these episodes published to you. The views presented here are my own.